New York just passed a new law regarding abortion. And I wanted to read something to you from FRC.org. That's Family Research Center, FRC.org. He says, Governor Andrew Cuomo signed the warrant for the execution of more innocents. In a state where the womb was already the most dangerous place for a child, this law begins a new era. Open season on our own. From now on, nothing stands in the way of a woman taking her baby's life, days, hours, or even a minute before she's born. A fully grown, healthy human baby that thousands of struggling couples would give anything to have. That's the savagery New York leaders call progress. That's the achievement that they're talking about. And the article goes on to say that it's a massive expansion, of course, in New York. And actually, I guess it's statewide, not just New York City. It's New York State. It's called the Reproductive Health Act. Don't you love the terminology there? Talk about irony. It's a health act. Late-term abortion is the new normal. And this article goes on to say where there's late-term abortion, there's almost always infanticide. And so it says, get ready for that. It says, this law sweeps away a large chunk of the penal codes that protected abortion survivors. And then some background on this. I thought it was horrific. The United States is one of only seven nations on the planet to allow elective abortion after 20 weeks or more than halfway through pregnancy. And also, this law allows non-physicians to carry out abortions. And it voids born-alive infant protections. It compels all insurance carriers to cover it. It denies protections for unborn victims of third-party violence. It's among the most permissive of our 50 states. There is no jurisdiction in the world to its left on abortion. None. Well, with that is a pretty sad way to start this. I wanted to talk about abortion and give you a few just general statistics. Medical authorities are saying now that a person is considered alive if the heart beats or if there's brainwave activity. Well, the heartbeat starts a little over 2 weeks after conception. Brainwave activity starts at 40 days. Now, here's the catch. Most all abortions are after 40 days. So we already have a heartbeat. We already have brainwave activity. This is an alive being. Here's another statistic. More than 95% of abortions are due to convenience. It's not rape. It's not the health of the mother, which is, of course, always what is put forward by the pro-abortion people. In 1959, I didn't know this, I think this is interesting, the United Nations adopted a Declaration of the Rights of the Child, and in part of it, it says, children need, quote, appropriate legal protection before as well as after birth. Isn't that interesting? The United Nations, not exactly a model of democracy, but even they said children needed legal protection. Well, as we begin to wrestle with this issue, of course, it's big, it's difficult, it's full of anguish for a lot of people. It's a gut-wrenching thing to even talk about. Well, let's start with talking about verses in the Bible that support the value of humans before and after birth. It starts in Genesis, doesn't it? Genesis 1. God says, let's make man in our image. So if we're killing babies, we're killing an image bearer. Exodus 20, that's part of the Ten Commandments. It says, you shall not murder. Well, what's murder? The taking of innocent life. What's going on with abortion? The taking of innocent life. Just a couple of others. I'll give you some that you can look up on your own. But Psalm 139 says, you knit me together in my mother's womb. So God put us together and saw us as individuals. Jeremiah 1 says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. That sounds like a person. That's person talking there, personhood discussion. And you can look in Psalm 22, verses 9 and 10. Take a look at Psalm 100, verse 3. Matthew 1, 18 to 23. Luke 1, 35 and 41. So one more time, I got these verses that I quoted, Genesis 1, 26, 27, Exodus 20, verse 13, Psalm 139, verses 13 to 16, in Jeremiah 1, verses 4 to 5. Let's do this now. Let's consider the other side. What are the arguments that are often used for abortion and show the weakness of each one? So this is good critical thinking skills here. You're going to hear, well, it's a right of privacy. Really? Can you see the problem there? You see the weakness of that argument? Nobody's got the right of privacy in this country, total privacy. You start abusing your child and your neighbor hears screaming coming from your house, a police officer comes to the door, you can't say, oh, officer, I have the right to privacy and shut the door. No, if a life is at stake, your privacy goes away. You do not have ultimate privacy. Here's another argument. Well, it's not a human being. Really? All creatures reproduce after their own kind. Of course it's a human being. Another argument used by the pro-abortion side, it's the mother's body. Do you see the problem there? The unborn has a different genetic code. It is a separate body located inside the mother's body. It is not the mother's body. Here's another one. Without abortion, poor women will be forced to have kids. Well, do you hear that argument? So basically, what is it saying? That when kids become expensive, we should be allowed to kill them. Well, that doesn't apply outside the womb, does it? You can't take a 15-year-old who's eating too much or wanting to go on dates or trying to buy his or her first car and say, I guess I can kill this individual because this one is getting expensive. No, that makes no sense. Here's a pivotal one the other side uses. After all, they don't call themselves pro-abortion. That's very uncomfortable. They call themselves pro-choice. So they say, we have the freedom to choose. Well, Greg Kochel always says, what do you mean by that? And our question might be, freedom to choose what? Do we have unrestricted freedom to choose anything we want in this society? And the answer is, absolutely not. Try going 80 through a school zone and the cop pulls you over and say, freedom of choice. That's not going to fly. We have to stop at stop signs. We're trying to save our society and not kill people by our lousy behavior. We can't run into a movie theater and yell fire and watch people run for the exit and trample each other. We do not have total freedom of choice. It depends what we're choosing. Here's another argument by the other side. Many unborn are unwanted. Well, wait a minute. Does that mean that we can kill anybody who's unwanted? Think about the homeless. I would guess many of them are unwanted. We certainly don't feel we have the right to kill them. One more argument for the other side. It doesn't look like a person. Well, it's what a person looks like at that stage of development. That's a pretty scary principle, by the way, to say it doesn't look like a person, so therefore we can get rid of it. What if you're in a terrible fire and you didn't look like everybody else after that? Should others have the right to kill you? Absolutely not. What about this? No one knows when life begins. Well, biology texts say we do know. At conception. How about this one? If no abortions are allowed, then women are going to be forced into back alley operations. Well, why would we want to make illegal and immoral activities safe? That's what they're arguing here. Make immoral and illegal activities safe. It's like robbing banks. So should we allow a person to rob a bank and make sure that the cops protecting the bank or the security people don't carry a gun so that we can keep those bank robbers safe? It doesn't make sense. Let's move to the other side now. What are some powerful arguments against abortion? Well, I think this is a terrific one. It's called the SLED test, S-L-E-D. And here's the argument. There is no morally relevant difference between the unborn and those of us who are already here. For example, S-L-E-D, let's take the S. We are a different size. Well, that is a difference, isn't it? We are a different size than the preborn. But does that make a difference? Size? Do you have more rights if you're bigger? No, we don't say that when people are alive and functioning in our society. A 7-foot person doesn't have more rights than a 5-foot person. Okay, that's the S. How about the L? Level of development. There's no moral difference as far as level of development. That's true that an unborn baby has a very low level of development, but an eighth grader has a higher level of development than a second grader. We don't say we should keep the eighth grader alive but kill the second grader. So that's SL. How about E? That's the environment. they're in a different environment. They're inside the mother's womb. But just because they're in a different environment, do they lose rights? Think about astronauts. They're in a different environment. They're up in space. Do they lose rights because they're in a different environment? Absolutely not. You go down in the bottom of the ocean, you do some scuba diving, you go down 100 feet. Do you lose any rights just because you're in a different environment? No. That's SLE. How about the D? That's degree of dependency. An unborn baby is certainly dependent on the mother. So what? Many times we're dependent on others. Let's take the astronaut idea again. Here's an astronaut up in space. Is that person really far more dependent than he or she would be here on Earth for all of the climate control aspects? Of course. Does that person lose any of their rights? No. So I think that's a terrific set of arguments against abortion. There's no morally relevant difference between the unborn and those of us who are here. There are four differences. SLED, we are a different size. We do have a different level of development. Yes, we're in a different environment before we're born. Yes, we have a different degree of dependency, but SLED makes no difference. There's no moral difference there. Number two, again, we're talking arguments against abortion. There are physical and psychological problems that go along with abortion. And people know that. I won't even spend time on it. Number three, here's another argument against abortion. Abortion leads down a slippery slope because it cheapens death. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. You're just killing the unborn where you can't see them. Well, if that's true, why not euthanasia and infanticide? And in fact, those are growing as well. Euthanasia, the taking of life on the other end, elderly. Infanticide, well, if you're killing them in the womb, why does going 6 inches down a birth canal give them rights? You should be allowed to kill them when they come out of the womb. And some ethicists, Peter Singer is one, who suggests that's exactly right. We should be able to kill them after birth as well as before birth. That's infanticide. So we're opening up all sorts of other horrors. Here's another argument against abortion. There are so many people who would love to adopt, but there are not enough babies available. Number five, here's a political argument. You look at the Declaration of Independence. We're supposed to have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Those are basic rights. They're spelled out for us. And look at the first one on that list, the right to life. You can't enjoy liberty, and you certainly can't pursue happiness if you don't have life. Life is the linchpin. It's the cornerstone. We are guaranteed that, and we're taking that right away from a baby. Number six, another argument against abortion. All we have to do, people say, oh, it's such a complicated issue. Actually, it's not. All we have to do is ask one key question. What is it? Talking about the preborn. What is it? The answer in this case, it's an innocent human being. And all major religions agree that innocent human beings should not be killed. Pretty simple. Okay. Well, what about solutions? What are some things we can do? I mean, most of us know down deep all of these things I've been talking about. We understand that. Well, here's some possibilities, things we can think about doing. One is being kind and gentle when we talk about this. We can ask questions. We can think about tactics. I always think it's effective to substitute when the pro-abortion side talks about the fetus or the unborn. We can apply their logic to the ones who are already here. And I did that in some of my examples. So you might think about that. When they say, well, it's going to cost the mom a lot. Poor women are going to have these kids and they're expensive. We say, all right, well, what about a 15-year-old? So I think you can substitute there and talk about newborns because people feel very different about that. Certainly we can volunteer. There are crisis pregnancy centers. We can help unwed moms through some kind of church involvement, help with adoptions. We can support pro-life organizations. There's a lot of stuff that we could be doing. Here's another thing we can think about. We have to understand that this is a fallen world and not get upset and horrified by this. We're living in a fallen world, and so we have to start there and just deal with it in that situation. Here's something else I think is really powerful. We should emphasize that we want what's best for society. What's the word I'm looking for? We don't want to be killjoys. We don't want to ruin other people. We don't want to be moral police or anything like that. What we're saying is, no, our position is this is the best thing for society. It'll allow for more adoptions. We've got the Declaration of Independence. We've got politics on our side. This does not cheapen life. It does not cheapen the value of human beings. We're trying to have people avoid physical and psychological problems associated with abortion. So we're actually trying to improve our society this way. Something else we can do is to affirm the other side. We always want to talk about them as if they're evil and terrible people. But really, two goods are clashing here, aren't they? The rights of the mother and the rights of the child. And we can acknowledge that. We can see that both sides actually agree abortion is not good. Of course, you know, the question there is, why is it not good then? If the other side thinks it's a right, why is it not good? What's wrong? What's icky about it? Both sides agree on the value of freedom. Again, the mother's freedom, the child's freedom. Both sides say they want less government intrusion. So we might figure out ways that we can acknowledge the other side and work with them. I think another thing we can talk about is how the pro-abortion side actually conflicts with reality. For example, there are laws on the book that protect the unborn in the case of homicide. You know, if you shoot a mother, a pregnant mother, and you hit her unborn child, you can be up on a homicide charge. But if that same woman goes in and aborts that baby, she's fine. She's off the hook. That's the same child, and it's the same result, a dead child. What's the difference? There's something very odd. It's schizophrenic there. And again, we can also say that many of these rights that are claimed are really not available in the real world, like the right to total privacy that I mentioned, or choice. Everybody agrees killing an infant is wrong. I think that conflicts with reality. We can talk about abortion clinics being terrible places. For example, Kermit Gosnell, they made a movie recently about what he did to his people that came into his clinic, Gosnell. Then you're going to hear this. This is just something that's, I think, coming up a little more often. Some people who are pro-abortionists are going to say, well, that's not, it may be a human being. They may grant you that. Yes, it's a human being, but it's not a person. They're trying to put a distinction there between those two. But the Greg Kokel question comes in at this point. What do you mean by that? Or what's the difference? And they're going to struggle with that because they want to draw the line somewhere, but everybody's going to draw a different line. Does it mean you're not as self-aware? Does it mean you're not thinking as much? I mean, where do you draw that line? So that's a really poor thing to say it's a person. It needs to be a person to have rights, but not human, because nobody can figure out what does it mean to be a person. Here's another, I guess you'd say, a self-inflicted wound for the pro-abortion side. They say they want to be left alone. Don't you interfere with me. But they want the government to push this off on people opposed to it through taxes and law and health care and shutting down crisis pregnancy centers and things like that. Here's another, I think, a self-inflicted problem. The pro-choice side stresses freedom. But of course, you notice the freedom is only for one side. In this case, it's just for the mom. So I'm so sad that New York has decided to allow abortions right up to the time of birth. I think it cheapens life. It does a lot of other things. I'm sorry to see that has happened. Again, this is just an opening set of remarks just to get people thinking about this. I would suggest resources here that you might want to pursue. Let's just take, I'll give you one book in particular, but there are a couple of others that you might think of. Scott Klusendorf, Klusendorf. Scott Klusendorf is probably the leading pro-life advocate in this country. He's got a book called The Case for Life. And you'll, if you read it, you'll see some of the things that I picked up from Scott. A couple of other good books, The Unaborted Socrates by Peter Kreft and Common Ground Without Compromise by Wagner. There are a couple of good CDs you might check on. I've mentioned Greg Kokel a couple of times here. He's part of Stand to Reason. That's str.org. He has a CD called Abortion, Only One Question. And you know what that question is? We talked about it already. What is it? Also, there's a CD called The Great Abortion Debate, Scott Klusendorf, and that's Stand to Reason as well, str.org. There's a good DVD called Making Abortion Unthinkable, and surprise, surprise, that's Greg Kokel, his DVD, and you go to str.org. If you want to go online, there's prolifetraining.com, all one word, pro-life training, str.org, that's Greg Kokel, and then the Family Research Council, they're the ones that I mentioned at the beginning of this talk, frc.org. Well, this is a tough issue. I'll tell you the good news. The ray of hope for me is that as they have done polls over the last 10, 15, 20 years, things have been gradually moving the direction of pro-life. There are many more arguments now as science lets us see more and more what's going on with that unborn child. And people are being won over. And this is a good thing that's happening. And let's keep the momentum coming this way. And let's save some lives.